Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show as I speak. It is Friday, July 16th, 2021. I know a lot of you are tuned in to hear me talk about politics, hear me talk about state politics, city politics, hear me rant and rave about MAGA, but we're not doing that today necessarily. Nope. I'm talking basketball. Everybody knows I'm an obsessive NBA fan. I slip that in every now and then, and I decided to dedicate a whole show to it with three equally obsessive NBA fans from all different walks of life, all different backgrounds. They bring their biases, their love for basketball to this show. So we're going to talk about the NBA finals, which I am so excited about, folks. This is a little embarrassed to admit. Dan, our guest, is going to smile when he hears this. I was so excited by game four, which just went down. What was it? Today is, that would have been Wednesday. I couldn't sleep, ladies and gentlemen. I was so excited. That was such an intense, incredible game. I thought I was watching Ollie Frazier in 1971. That's how it felt. And when it was all over, how could you go to sleep, man? So that's why I'm an intense basketball fan, and I got three basketball junkies with me. I'm going to start with the man we call the bookie. Please introduce yourself. Mr. Bookie.
No, I'm not an evil Marvel villain. I'm actually just a real human being who got labeled the Bookie. Just an unemployed guy who loves basketball and immerses himself into data and analytics and happens to win or lose a lot of money on every game.
Yes, his name is Benji. Benji the Bookie, we call him. He's in my bowling league. He's an insanely good gambler. And the couple times I joined him in gambling, I lost. I won't do it again. Second guest that will name Michael. Introduce yourself.
Yeah, this is Mike Malcolm with We Travel Food. And I am not a gambler, but I might take a couple bets today, depending on the topic.
All right. Well, then listen to what Benji has to say. And third guest that we call Dan. Introduce yourself.
I'm Dan Mihalopoulos. I'm an investigative reporter at WBZ Chicago Public Media. And this story once on my fellow Greek, Giannis Antetokounmpo, big fan of his and of the Bucks. I don't know what else to tell you. I don't gamble, actually, although I am Greek. It's one of those things, like, if you're Greek, you can joke about Greeks gambling. But I just am not into it. I'm just afraid if I get into it, I'll be too into it, maybe.
Well, that's my fear as well, Dan, and that's why I try to stay away from Benji at bowling. I'm sort of a reform gambler. I start chasing the bet, which is a really bad thing to do. Benji stays really cool and calm. The bets that he makes are like over-under bets. There's second-half bets, first-half bets, fourth-quarter bets. You could do any kind of bet you want, and I will start trying to protect myself, and I'll lose a lot of money. All right. When this show airs, it'll be Monday morning, And right now, as I speak, it's Friday afternoon. It's 2-2. There's a game tomorrow. So you have to think about what the audience will be thinking about when they hear this Monday morning. So we'll start with you, Dan. And since you're the most fanatical Bucks fan among, I think you're probably the only actual legitimate Bucks fan. I'm rooting for the Bucks right now only because my son-in-law comes from Milwaukee, so I have no choice but to root for them. Dan, we'll go down the line. It's 2-2 now. When folks listen to this on Monday, what will the score in games be?
It'll be 3-2 Bucks, and like the fans are chanting Pfizer for him. They'll be angling for Bucks in six, I think, now that Giannis clearly is 100%, could probably put in close to 48 minutes. I really don't think they can stop him. I'm not sure what slowed him down in the last game, but I think with a little bit of help from his friends, maybe his longtime teammate, Chris Middleton, you know, everybody talks about how they went from being a 15-win team together to being on the cusp now of being NBA champions. I think this is their year, and I think this is going to be another comeback for them like they had against Brooklyn.
Michael, your prediction.
I'm going to go 3-2, Suns. I'm going to put some good vibes out there for Chris Paul. He hasn't done the best over the last couple of games, but I'm going to just attribute that to the home team advantage of him playing, I should say for the Bucks, of him playing away in their stadium. You know, the crowd has not been friendly. You know, the crowd in Phoenix really gave Giannis a lot of grief, especially at the free throw line. So I think it's a little bit payback. I see it looks like they're rattled a little bit. Hasn't really been himself, but I'm hoping that this is going to be a Chris Paul year.
Benji, what will the score be on Friday, on Monday?
I think it's going to be a low scoring game. Typically in the, you know, game five is almost like a game seven. The winner usually wins the series. So it's, well, not exactly as critical as a game seven. It's super critical. And in these situations where people are tired, the pressure gets mounting, the scores tend to drop quite a bit. So I would lean towards the under. First of all, I'm going to say like 102.98 Bucks. I think it'll be a tough game. This has been just a crazy series to me. Like one of the weirdest NBA finals I can remember. I think partially because of everybody's tired and banged up after a condensed season. There's hardly any bench in either team anymore. So you're relying on some just random guys like PJ Tucker to make threes or, you know, other guys that, you know, it's hit or miss, right? Every game is like a hit or miss, it seems like. And I think the Bucks are the better team. I think they've figured some stuff out. And if they just play smart, they should win. Now, they don't always play smart. The first half of the last game was a perfect example. They clearly had a massive advantage inside. They figured that out. And then they just didn't even try to go there because Giannis was, I don't know, had to pee for the entire first half. I don't know what was going on there. It didn't even look like he wanted to touch the ball. But one of the greatest stats I just saw was on ESPN last night. And they were saying what the record, this is since 2000, the best records in the playoffs from games 4-7. And Milwaukee this year has, you know, individual games, individual teams, individual years. Milwaukee has the third best winning percentage of any team since 2000 in from games four on. And every one of the top five have won the championship. Now, of course, if they lose two of these games, they won't be in that top five. But if they continue at that pace, what it shows is that they figure out teams and then they become almost impossible to beat. And I think that's kind of, I'm not saying they're impossible to beat right now, but they have the clear advantage. So I think Bucks and six.
I don't think the Milwaukee Bucks would even be here if not for the fact that Kyrie Irving went down. I have no doubt in my mind.
You have to expect that Kyrie Irving will always go down.
Okay. Well, so you have to factor that in. but this is why it's so unpredictable, because First of all, the Phoenix Suns wouldn't be here if AD, Anthony Davis, hadn't hurt his leg in round one. I think the Lakers would have prevailed. I don't believe the Bucks would be here had Kyrie Irving not gone down. And there's something about the Milwaukee Bucks and the way they play the game, particularly in this playoff series. I don't believe they're capable of going into Phoenix in game five and winning. I believe they're totally capable of coming home to Milwaukee, prevailing to tie at 3-3, but I just don't think with the way their mindset works, they're capable of going into Phoenix and winning. So I think when folks listen, it'll be 3-2 Phoenix, and everybody will be writing off the Bucks, which I think would be foolish. So Dan, your response to one, my statement that the Bucks wouldn't be here if Irving hadn't got injured, and two, I don't think they can win Saturday in Phoenix. Go.
I think either one. Let's take the second one first. I think that either one of the teams has shown already in the series that they, although they've held serve, you know, and won at home, I think there've been chances for both teams to clearly win games away from home, particularly if Giannis had been fully healthy from the start. And the part of the Bucks, but I think, you know, clearly the Suns led for the vast majority of the game until the last couple minutes of game four in Milwaukee. So I don't think that Milwaukee is incapable of winning in Phoenix, although I think it's difficult. But Phoenix is a great record on the road too. So I wouldn't write them off either if they lose the next game at home. So I think it's very well matched. As far as Kyrie Irving and, you know, there've been a jillion injuries in the NBA, including Giannis's, when that series was far from over. And so I think every team has to deal with injuries, and the Brooklyn Nets were set up in a way to, you know, there've been a lot of good stories. They were kind of jinxed by that big piece in the New York Times Sunday magazine about how they're basically unbeatable, because then they came apart, both, you know, with the injuries and just on the court, who was left on the court. And so I think that clearly, you know, every team has injuries, and it's been a war of attrition. I think the condensed schedule, the shorter off season, those things are very important to these guys. They're not machines, they're human beings. And we're seeing the same level of injuries in, you know, you say I'm a basketball obsessive, but I'm more obsessed with soccer, actually. And they've had a very similar situation with, you know, plus the summer tournaments with their national teams, you know, like the European Championship that just ended. A lot of guys getting injured. And I think it's really been unreasonable, the stress that players have been put under. Unreasonable even considering their astronomical salaries. So, you know, cry me a river, injuries happen, and the teams that won are the teams that won.
All right, Michael, I don't know if you heard it. Before I get back to you, I'm going to follow up with the Chris Paul question. I don't believe the Suns would have been, when I let this off, I don't believe the Suns would be here if AD had not gone down in round one with the, I forget what he had, a leg pull or something. And he limped out to the court for the final game, but he was clearly not himself and he didn't play. And Charles, I agree with Barkley. They shouldn't have brought him out at all anyway. Do you agree with that position that the Suns would not be here if not for the injury to AD?
Oh yeah. I had AD and LeBron all day. Yeah. You know, I was really sad to see him going down, but you know, happy to see him at least get, just same way I'm rooting for Chris Paul, you know. Even though Chris Paul is a Chicago guy, I was definitely rooting for AD just because he was from a hometown hero.
Well, you know, I was rooting for Chris Paul too, because he's old and he was the president of the union, and I'm a union guy, and so I was rooting for my show is sponsored by unions, not sponsored by the NBA Players Association. Come on, guys, kick in a little. So I was rooting for Chris Paul, but I stopped rooting for him because I've really kind of fallen in love with the Bucks. I have to admit, Michael, there's Giannis. I'm going to get into Giannis in a little while. No, I'm going to get into it right now. I've never seen a player like this, Michael. I'll get your reaction to this, and then I know Dan is going to win. I've never seen a player approach the free throw line, a biggest head case as Giannis on two fronts. One, he can't hit free throws, and you could see him just struggling with it. And two, he doesn't care. That's the second head. I like the second. Like Ben Simmons of Philadelphia, that Benji Hall told me about long before anybody else was talking about him. I just want to say, that man can't hit free throws. He goes to the free throw line. He's a basket case. He's like petrified. He's so scared he won't even shoot the ball because he's afraid of getting fouled. The beautiful thing about Giannis, Michael, is that he knows he can't shoot free throws. He knows he's a freaking head case, and he doesn't care. He's still going. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it actually seemed like when they were counting down in Phoenix, he got better. It seemed like he caught his rhythm as they were counting. And so because he sped up his release on the shot. And I was noticing it around, after the second game. I was like, well, he's getting better on his free throws. it was obvious. So that's one thing. I'm a huge Giannis fan. I mean, just that injury that he came back from, I felt so bad for them, because even though I'm not rooting for the Bucks, I hate to see the opposite team lose because of injury to any player. You know, it's one of the worst things ever. That is one worst parts of sports, I should say, is just the injuries to anybody, but especially the main players that, you know, the other team doesn't have a chance without, you know, because it just makes the next round uninteresting. So I'm amazed at him and just his ability to just bounce back from all of it, right? The chants from the crowd, the physical pain. I mean, he's a freak for real. I mean, whatever. He's a beast. So I definitely, again, love to see him do it. But I think Chris Paul, you know, speaking of people being head cases, I wonder sometimes about him in the clutch. You know, he's had some opportunities. I think it was when he was with the Clippers, was it? Or what? One of those teams, some team, you know, he's had some great opportunities. And he, a lot of times, I know it was injury that took him out. And so it wasn't necessarily his fault, but it seems to always happen when they really need him. And that was the first thing that I thought of when he fell down with that final turnover. I was like, I hate that I'm not surprised, you know. So I don't know. I still got sons just because I want them to do it.
Benji, your thoughts on Giannis dealing with free throws and Chris Paul? Does he choke?
You're so right about Giannis mentally overcoming the fear of failure on free throws, and you know, there's so many guys that stopped going to the line. But I think he's actually, part of the thing is that he puts so much work into everything he does, and he used to be a good free throw shooter. It's a mental block for sure that happened. And I think it seems like it stemmed from the series back when they lost to Toronto and Kawhi, and he just all of a sudden couldn't make free throws, and it became a thing. But one of the things he finally did, which, you know, any expert on shooting mechanics said, was he finally sped up his free throw routine. I mean, it was too long. It gives you time to think and doubt, right? Make it quicker. It's definitely quicker than 10 seconds now. And since he's done that, he's actually shot pretty well. So kudos for him for making that adjustment. Now, if he could just stop shooting threes, everybody would be a lot happier. I mean, that's the most confounding thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I can't believe a coach wouldn't just look at the game every time he does that.
Talk about that. What's with Giannis and the threes? Please explain that to me, Benji.
I have no idea. You know, part of me wonders if the coaching staff is telling him to do it, because why else would he be doing it at this point? I mean, you'd think all his teammates would be like, hey, Giannis, next year, do that. All right. Well, it's not now. You know, we got the whole offseason for threes. I tell you, it's one of the funnest bets I do every game in Milwaukee. Giannis over under threes, 0.5. It's hilarious because you know he's going to chuck one up, and every now and then one goes in. So it's kind of a funny bet. And then as far as Chris Paul goes, he's a little guy. He's old and he wears out. And it was so smart to put Drew Holiday on him. After game one, I don't know what the heck they were thinking game one. It was like they were still like celebrating the last series or something, the coaching staff. But, you know, put Drew Holiday on him. He just makes his life miserable from the moment he gets the ball inbounded and he's hounding him the whole game. That wears you out. I think he's exhausted, and he's probably got a bunch of nicks and, you know, injuries or whatever, but he's certainly not 100%. Now, that doesn't mean he can't come out and have a crazy great game again, because he certainly can. But I think that's kind of what's going on. It'll be really interesting to see in game five, what is Chris Paul like in the fourth quarter? He may come out strong. He may have a good first half. He may even have a good third quarter, but will he still have his legs in the fourth quarter? I'm thinking he's not going to.
Benji, just thinking about the crowd counting down, can you imagine at bowling if they had a 10-second countdown?
Well, I would embrace it. You know me. I'm such a ham, so that would go right into my style. But, it would be funny for most people to freak out. But we have the strike pot. It's kind of similar, right, where everybody's cheering at you or jeering at you, and it's the pressure. It's a mini version of shooting a clutch free throw.
Mini. So the way the strike pot works, Michael, is you draw.
It's the difference between tens of thousands and millions of viewers versus about 20.
Yeah, 20. It's about 20. You imagine 40 drunk guys in a bowling alley,
right?
And everybody watching. If the person whose number is drawn gets to roll a ball, if he hits a strike, he wins the pot. So it could be $100 in a pot. I don't know, whatever. So everyone's jeering you. So this is the bowling equivalent of what Giannis has to put up with in Phoenix. So you got 50 drunks.
Speak to the pressure that Giannis is going through.
All right, Dan, you've rejoined us. The questions on the table are Giannis and his free throw shooting. He's a head case because he can't make them, but he's equally a head case in a positive way because it doesn't seem to bother him. In your opinion, does he take too many threes? And will Chris Paul crumble on Saturday? Floor is yours, Dan.
So the three-pointers, I've been meaning to look this up. There was a period when he was hitting a fair number of threes, not, you know, anything great by the standards of the best three-point shooters. But I want to say it was that season when they had the best record and then it was interrupted by the coronavirus and they just weren't the same coming back. I really believe that he was working on his three a lot in the offseason between that loss to Toronto, was it two seasons ago, and then the corona pandemic interrupted season. I think before the pandemic, he was actually shooting some threes. I think the mentality is, you know, that if he could shoot threes too, if he could shoot anything from outside, really, I mean, he'd be really unstoppable. He already puts up numbers that very, very few players have put up. The sort of, you know, not quite a triple-double a game, but certainly, you know, around 30, 10 plus, 12, you know, and 5-6 assists at least. These are the sort of numbers that you never see. And so if he had an outside shot, I mean, he'd could shoot free throws, he would be unstoppable. As far as the pressure goes, I mean, I think the guy has perspective on his life. He just signed a contract for $225 million. He used to be the son of undocumented, you know, immigrants in a country, you know, an African guy, African roots, and African racially in a white country, in a European country, who was selling CDs on the street. And he was a man with no country because that you know, my ancestral homeland doesn't have birthright citizenship just because he was born there. He didn't get a passport until he showed that he was a great basketball player and he could play for the national team. So in this context, it doesn't seem that anything bothers him. He seems very much unflappable on the court, off the court. He seems a very... cool customer that, you know, you see him getting ready for those free throws and he's still trying to play with his mechanics before he takes the shot. And so I don't think that he's looking at it as a, if he feels that he's a head case. I just think it's just a couple things that he can't do that well. Nobody can do everything well. And I don't think anybody can do all the things that he can do well.
And then
I think that's a great point. Well, I just wanted to make a great really great point about Giannis and his mental strength and, you know, his upbringing coming and maybe playing a part in that because, you know, I think about that a lot, you know, with him being a street vendor and all that. And I can just imagine what it feels like to go from that to go to being the MVP of the NBA. And so when he's out there with the ball in his hand, standing at the head behind the arc, right? And his man drops all the way back to the rim, right? Why not shoot the ball? Like, it's like he's everything, his whole entire life came down to this moment. He's going to shoot that shot. You know what I mean? I think that's what it is. He probably has to get a few up every game, and I'm sure he hits a lot in practice as well. But yeah, that's a great point there.
And if he misses, he'll run down the court the other way and stuff somebody's shot, or just, you know, they'll give up a point, and he just keeps playing the same way, I think. And his demeanor seems very similar. You know, they talk about the Giannis mean mug. That's on some, you know, truly spectacular plays, but I don't think he gets too up or too down, depending on where they are on the scoreboard.
Well, I got to disagree with that, because he has had the last two games in the beginning of the game. It's now been reported that, you know, he's got to come out and right away in both games, whether to pee or whatever. But they're saying he's so anxious that he starts hyperventilating and actually forces him to piss. So he's clearly too amped up in the beginning, and that's probably got to drain him a little bit as well. But he has in the past at clutch situations, especially at the free throw line, had some issues. This year he seems to overcome it at the very end, but we haven't seen him yet at the line in a tie game with a minute left, you know, or something like that. I don't want to see that as a Bucks fan myself right now.
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point. Yeah, I mean, he was saying the other day he wants Chris Middleton to have the ball at the end. Chris Middleton scored 8 points in a row when their whole season was on the line, their whole championship bid was on the line. So I see what you're saying too. I don't think that he's going to get too down on himself. But yeah, I don't know what's going on at the beginning. He said is this the polite way to say it? I had to take a tinkle. That was his post-game. Like, you know, I guess he's trying to laugh it off. He's certainly trying to play it off. Will he come out, you know, and hyperventilate in game 5 in Phoenix? But, you know, he did have a lot left at the end. I mean, he had enough in reserve to stuff that shot. It was 8-1 went up off that pass from Devin Booker. And I want to talk about Devin Booker, too. He makes me feel old because I was a Mizzou student when his dad went to the Elite Eight, Melvin Booker. Does anyone remember him?
Yeah.
I just want to throw – we're talking about Greece and the Bucks. I want to talk about the Mizzou Tigers, too.
Well, I'll talk about Kentucky, man, because that's where Booker went to college. And it's kind of ironic that the team that beat his crazy great Karl Towns team that was undefeated was Wisconsin. He may lose again to a Wisconsin team.
Yeah. I saw that game with Benji. It was Monday Night Bowling, and I was really rooting for Kentucky, and I can't stand Wisconsin at this moment right now, just thinking about it. All right. Before we go to Chris Middleton, let's finish with keep it with Giannis. I'm going to talk about the block shot. Dan, you're going to set it up. We'll go to Michael and then Benji for your responses. I particularly thought the block shot on Ayton was definitely the best defensive play of this playoff. I excitingly sent Dan a text that right after it happened saying it's the greatest block shot, greatest defensive play of all time. Then I thought about LeBron James chasing down, was it Andre Iguodala in 2016 for the block, which, you know, let's gotta give some shout out to LeBron in that. After the block shot, Skip Bayless sent out a tweet, Dan. What an idiot.
He said it was an overrated play.
Yeah. Overrated play. So, that's just the gist of it. So, just your thoughts on the shot itself and Skip Bayless and the role in journalism these days, where journalists say the most ridiculous things they can to get hits on Twitter and still get to be journalists. And then we'll go Michael and Benji and their thoughts. Go ahead, Dan.
the kids call it the hot take, right? I mean, I don't know how young you have to be to have grown up calling it the hot take. It's just the, really, like you said, trying to get a rise out of people and judging the success of it by the reply that you get, which is against, you know, journalism is to try to get at the truth. And maybe he really believed that, but I think he's just trying to get a rise out of people, in which case I'll take the bait. He's overrated. And so is his brother's food.
Oh, throw the brother.
Two in one.
He threw the brother in.
They don't, I don't even know if they get along.
Poor Rick.
But I'm gonna stick it to his family too. You want a hot take? I'll go after your family. This is how we do it in ask Giannis. This is how we do it in Southern Europe.
Don't bring Giannis's brother into this.
That is outside of Chicago on the north side.
Michael, your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to say that I stopped listening to Skip Bayless a long time ago. So until you just said that, I didn't even know that he had made that comment. It's so ridiculous. It didn't even come up across my radar. That play, when I saw that happen, I'm trying to think what the score was at that time. Phoenix might have either been up two, I believe.
Down two. It was a two-point game.
Down two. Yeah, it was over at that. Like when that happened, I was like, it's game. You know, there was still some time left on the clock. But once that play happened, the game was over. Like that was the nail in the coffin right there. So for him to say that it was overrated, it was ridiculous. I would still give LeBron the edge only because he had to come full court. And I mean, I could watch that play a million times right now. And I just don't know how he ever made it. In time, but like that play last night was amazing. I watched it a few times this morning. It was a really great play.
Well, I'll read you the exact quote from Skip Bayless, giving him way too much time than he deserves. But the Giannis block of Ayton is being completely overrated. It was a lob. He put that in big bold prints, like we're all idiots. Now I see your point. Giannis had plenty of time to go up and meet. This is so stupid. Giannis had plenty of time to go up and meet Ayton as he was catching the ball at its peak. He almost couldn't help but block it. What an idiot. Plenty of time. It was a freaking split second turn on a dime. He had been carding the guard, Devin Booker. Booker throws the lob. He has a split second, Michael Malcolm, turn on a dime. But he plenty of time. He makes it seem like they're having a picnic.
He's guarding two people at once. It's incredible.
Guarding two people at once. I was watching that play a few times this morning. He was guarding the ball handler, and he jumped and turned and got that ball at his highest point. That was an amazing play.
All you got to do is look how high those guys are when the block happens. They are so high above the rim. And, Benny, to your point, covering Booker, he spins, jumps, times it. I mean, it's silly. It's just silly. Skip, the advice, he's giving you advice in his own name on what to do with him.
Good point. I wouldn't have known about it in my defense, except one young Dan Mielopoulos sent me the tweet, and I've been venting about it ever since. I've been telling people in the street, can you believe this?
Yeah.
Ben, you need help.
I would also say that Andre Iguodala helped LeBron immensely by double pumping like an idiot instead of just going strong. And shout out to Bam Adebayo's block on Jason Tatum. It was one of the greatest blocks ever in the playoffs.
Oh, my God. How could I forget that?
That win again.
That was, yes, that was last year in the bubble.
Meeting at the rim.
It happened. Yeah, at the rim. Meeting him at the rim. Yes. How can I forget that?
Well, it was a year ago.
And it was a year. I know. I forgot it already. but that wasn't a finals game for what it's worth.
No,
it wasn't
that's
a,
fair.
But whatever.
That's
it, all right. My recipe for success for the Bucks is to get the ball to Chris Middleton, get the ball to Chris Middleton, get the ball to Chris Middleton. He has such a quick release. It's really a joy to watch him.
He
reminds me that I'm going back. Oh, wow. Okay. Which part? A joy to watch or quick release?
No, I love Chris Middleton, but I don't think they should play through him. He's too hot and cold home and away. And the key and what's the confounding to me about Middleton and Drew Holiday is they both shy away from contact. They hardly ever draw fouls. And, you know, they're certainly not into the histrionic Chris Paul mode. Which is good for a viewer because I hate that, but it's bad. Yeah. It's bad for a fan of the Bucks because they're going to the line a lot less than they probably should because just the way they play their style. I think the key to the Bucks winning is to pound it in down low to Giannis and Brooke Lopez over and over and over again. While Brooke is in the game, they should utilize him down low way more. And Giannis, I would just go to Giannis over and over. I think Giannis needs to score 40 points for this in this game for them to win. If they're relying on a big Middleton game, they're in deep trouble.
Michael Malcolm, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. You know, I think that if the for the Bucks, if I was looking at it for the from the Bucks perspective, yeah, I think it's helped them in the last couple of games having Middleton with the ball down the stretch, but. You know, the Suns have coaches as well. And at the end of the day, things are different when, as we've seen, the things are a little bit different when they're playing away. So I would think that the coaches for the Suns would make some type of adjustments so that they can figure out a way, whether it's trapping Middleton, because again, they're more than willing to give Giannis a wide open three. You know, so I don't know what they do to get that ball out of Middleton's hand, but, you know, going down the stretch. But I wouldn't rely on him, just like Ben said. He's a little flaky. He's too hot and cold. Some days he's really, really off. And, you know, again, their last, if he does go to seven, two games are going to be at home. I mean, I'm sorry, two games are going to be away.
Well, that's why I predicted Phoenix would win on Saturday. Dan, your thoughts?
Yeah, and what got them here over the course of the whole season is, you know, Giannis in the paint. And in terms of who's going to help him, it might be Holiday. It might be Middleton on certain days. We've seen he can even do more than Giannis on certain days like the other day. And by the way, he did draw a foul, although I agree with Ben that, you know, he needed to do that more often. But I think the game set match moment of game four, even as great as the block was and as much as it was not overrated, I think wasn't Middleton right after that who had a three-point play where he scored a bucket, went to the hoop. So he's both a good shooter, and I think, you know, with his size, he should be going to the hoop more, drawing more fouls. That three-point play, I think, definitely clinched it when we look back. Those two moments for me back-to-back, yeah, I think I was able to sleep, unlike Ben, but I did find it, yeah, it was exhilarating. I mean, this is a great NBA Finals. It took me back to my youth with watching the Bulls, you know, and Giannis has put up some performances, that 20 points in the third quarter, first time since Jordan that someone's done that in the Finals. So I think he's put to bed this whole idea that he doesn't show up in the Finals. But you know, Twitterverse and the hot takes and the Skip Baylesses of the world will get rich going up and down from idolizing him to crapping all over him and everyone else. And I just think it's exaggerated. They're people, not just because of their feelings, but they can't perform the same way all the time. Some are more consistent than others, but let's just remember these guys. I mean, for all they get paid, they're still people, man.
Well, that's all the more reason you got to go to Giannis, because they can't stop him. There's no one on their team that can stop him. And if he gets Ayton into any kind of foul trouble, it's game over. Like, Phoenix is then cooked, and they need Ayton in there. Even if they get anyone in foul trouble.
I have to completely disagree with you, Benji. It was not the first time. This sounds like a Monday night bowling discussion in between bowling. I completely disagree with you, but I got to go bowl now. I'll tell you when I'm done bowling. the Bucks don't win the other night if Chris Middleton doesn't hit those shots in the fourth quarter. Let's be honest. They put that wall up around Giannis. He can't get the ball. And he goes out and gets the ball. He's throwing up stupid threes. And so you need Chris Middleton to open it up. Go ahead.
But, you know, it's because they switched their offense, Benny. They were focusing on getting Middleton going, and Giannis was doing his stand around the three-point line trying to be point guard Giannis. When they do that, they're not good. When he's flashing down low and they throw it to him in the paint, he's deadly. But when he's a point guard, you just play 10 feet off him, and now there's the paint is clogged, and you can't really do much. So I think that was a failure of Milwaukee coaching. And Chris Middleton bailed them out. I'm saying if they're relying on Chris Middleton bailing them out this game, they're going to lose.
I would actually go another way and another route and say that I think it was the refs that bailed the Bucks out because they call out of bounds.
Was it the seventh foul of Devin Booker that you're upset about? Or?
Well, yeah. I think that sixth one, they knew they had blew it so bad.
Yeah.
And had him out. You're right. At first, it was a turnover that wasn't off of him. And then they came right down and called a foul on him. That wasn't a foul. And it was one of those things where it just speaking, you know, we've given Giannis a lot of shout outs for his mental strength. Shout out to Devin Booker for having a bounce back game. He was having a great game minus the fouls. He was having a great game. He looked like he was into it. He was so angry. You could tell he could feel it because when they took him out of the game, he wasn't even sitting. He was just standing up, just pissed on the sideline.
Yeah,
kicking things. He knew he was in his mode. And the refs called him, got him out the game. If Devin Booker was in that game, they would have won.
Michael, you're probably right. It would, because he was on fire, they couldn't stop him. I'll tell you, this is one of my pet peeves. I don't know if Benji's ever heard me rant and rail about this at Monday Night Bowling. One of my pet peeves is when a player uses a foul to stop a breakaway.
Oh, it's crazy.
And I'm like, give the 2 points up. The 2 points is less valuable than that foul. And one of the fouls that Devin Booker had, you can't blame on the refs, was he grabbed somebody to keep him from. I'm like, why? I always get mad. Why are you doing that? And then invariably, if you follow it, all of a sudden they'll go, oh, that guy's got 5 fouls now. Yeah, because he gave a stupid foul.
Right.
That, and this is the other thing, Michael Malcolm, that all the guys at the bowling alley know I'm insane on. When point guards don't just pick up the ball and dribble it. This thing where they let the ball bounce down the court
because
they don't want to. Like Benji knows what I'm. Yeah, I'm like, I'm hoping someday that someone steals the ball with that thing.
Yeah,
it's happened before in the past. I've seen it. I'm actually a fan of that. I get the logic behind that, but no, the fouls to stop the free the breakaways. No, those are ridiculous, and that seems to be a newer thing. I know they're doing it more in the playoffs. I know, you know, no easy baskets in the NBA playoffs. But it seems to be more of a thing now that they're even doing during the regular season. I wish they would stop.
They got to change the rule. You know what's even
when teams are like want the clock, want to use up clock, they're doing the same thing. I've seen it like Chris Paul doesn't pick up the ball. Chris, you want to chew up clock. Why are you not picking up? Whatever. All right. We'll close.
Maybe
with
it was
a little
Cliff
bit
Paul.
Up. Cliff Paul, yes. The brother. So we'll close by seeing if I'll ask you if you think I'm being unfair and irrational. Of all the players on the court that I dislike the most, number one is Pat Connaughton, who plays for the Bucks, because he went to Notre Dame. I have biases. Benji has a lot of biases when it comes to college. If it's guys from Kentucky, he loves the guy beyond belief. So am I unfair, Dan Mihalopoulos, to hold a bias against Pat Connaughton because he goes to Notre Dame and Notre Dame's beaten my beloved Northwestern so many times? Go ahead.
Of course. I mean, he's a good player. I mean, we're, you know, for a lot of people, I don't buy into the whole, you know, Rudy aura, the touchdown Jesus. I was never into it, but I'm not going to hold it against them either.
Okay.
Let's just say that. I mean, in certain milieus in this country, people are like, oh, you know, going to Notre Dame is the peak. I mean, I think the other day, Lindsey Graham said that Notre Dame is one of the greatest universities in the country because they're allowing Chick-fil-A to go there over the feelings of some students. Is it one of the greatest universities in the country? No. Is it all they crack it up to be? No. But am I going to pick on Pat Connaughton for going from, his Boston Irish upbringing to playing for Notre Dame? That's their dream, right?
Well, he clearly couldn't get into Duke because he was a natural Dukie all day long. But, you know.
I have the same attitude about Dukie, by the way, just so you know, Dan.
Well, of course,
okay. Yeah. I can't stand Duke players.
You have the same attitude about a lot of things.
Notre Dame basketball.
I love it.
Let's be honest.
No, I'm And I'm an NIU Husky, so I don't like any of them.
Who's the last NIU Husky to be in the NBA? I can't think of one right now. There must be one in the NBA right now. I just can't. Football.
Who are the hated rivals of the NIU Huskies? Do they have a rival that's really hated? Natural rivalry?
No, I don't know.
Who was that coach? The coach who went to Minnesota in football, and he was at Michigan, one of the Michigan's teams, and he turned that Michigan team around. They beat Northern Illinois in football. I blank it on his name. It'll come to me after we're done taping the show. It's a football. It's a Michigan team. They're their big rivals. All right. So we'll close one more time. You've had chance to change your predictions. I'm going to write them down. And then Tuesday, I'm going to hold you to it to promote the show. I'm going to go on my regular show and say who is right and who is wrong. So, Benji, who will win Saturday's game?
Oh, it's Bucks 102-98. I'm going under. I'm going Milwaukee. They're going to win in six, too, as well. And I think Giannis, a great bet, Giannis over 33.5, I believe, is his point line. I don't see how he doesn't get more than that.
All right. I wrote them all down. I'm going to probably go bet in Vegas based on what Benji said. Michael Malcolm, your predictions.
I got Suns in seven. I got them winning this game tomorrow, 105-102.
Whoa, a close game, not a blowout.
No, wow. It's not going to be a blowout.
And do you think the over-under, Giannis will be over or under his average of 33?
Oh, he'll be over for sure. Yeah, Giannis has been playing amazing. I don't know if he can keep up with the 40-point games, and Middleton have the amazing games, and Devin Booker and Chris Paul both not having great games. Yeah. You know, it's a lot would have to happen.
I'm with you. Dan?
I think Bucks in six. Giannis will get the MVP by scoring more than, 34-plus points. I think how much do they win by tomorrow? I think their offense will click for the first time in a way that it really hasn't. Everybody clicking simultaneously. And so despite the fact that they're getting ground down, I think 3 days off is okay. And he's gaining strength from that injury. Seems 100%. I would say that the Bucks put up, 115-105.
Okay. And guys,
it's a team that averaged 120 points all season. But, you know, it's not February in regular season.
Not playing the Bulls.
February at the United
States. Yeah, I had to say that. The Suns will win to make it 3-2. The Bucks will win in Milwaukee to tie it up 3-3. Ladies and gentlemen, you go to Vegas with this. Chris Paul will be so tired with one day off, he won't be able to do it in Game 7. The world will be stunned. The Milwaukee Bucks will go to Phoenix and win to win the championship. Take it to Vegas, wow. Ladies and gentlemen. yeah, Benji's like, forget. That's why you always lose.
Love it.
Gambling. all right.
You're Benji, right, like Michael, a Tarantino movie.
Yeah, it's a just to let everybody know, we're gonna do an NBA draft show. Benji will definitely be there. The guy knows the draft like no one I know. And we'll be doing a draft game. That'll probably be our next basketball one. I want to thank Benji, Michael.
We could quickly
Dan.
Just
thank
do the Bulls
much.
Draft right now, Ben. Oh, that's right. They
ha ha ha. They have no first round pick. Benji will be playing at Zany's later tonight with his jokes. he's got a million of them, ladies and gentlemen. Bulls trade their draft choice for Vukovic, and he sucks. And oh god, my life is miserable. Anyway, thank you, Benji. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Dan. I'm Ben Drofsky. Take care, everybody.